The Boyfriend, written by Freda McFadden, performed by Adam Blandford and Victoria Connolly.
Prologue. Before. Tom. I am desperately, painfully, completely, and stupidly in love. Her name is Daisy. We met when we were 4 years old. I've been in love with the girl since age 4. That's how pathetic I am. I saw her at the playground feeding bits of her sandwich to the hungry squirrels, and all I could think was that I had never met any living creature as beautiful or as kind as Daisy Driscoll. And I was gone. For a long time, I didn't tell her how I felt. I couldn't. It seemed impossible that this angel with golden hair and pale blue eyes and skin like the porcelain of our bathroom sink could ever feel a tenth of what I felt for her, so there was no point in trying. But lately, that's changed. Lately, Daisy has been letting me walk her home from school. If I'm lucky, she lets me hold her hand, and she gives me that secret little smile on her cherry red lips that makes my knees weak. I'm starting to think she might want me to kiss her. But I'm scared. I'm scared that if I tried to kiss her, she would slap me across the face. I'm scared that if I told her how I really feel, she would look at me in sympathy and tell me she doesn't feel the same way. I'm scared she might never let me walk her home again. But that's not what I'm most scared of. What I am most scared of is that if I lean in to kiss Daisy, she will let me do it. I'm scared that she will agree to be my girlfriend. I'm scared that she will allow me into her bedroom when her parents aren't home so that we can finally be alone together. And I'm terrified that the moment I get her alone, I will wrap my fingers around her pretty white neck and squeeze the life out of her.
Chapter 1. Present day. Sydney. Who is this man and what has he done with my date? I'm supposed to be meeting a man named Kevin for dinner tonight at 8 o'clock. Well, it was supposed to be drinks at 6 o'clock. Drinks are easier to escape from. But Kevin messaged me through the Cinch dating app that he was running late at work, and could we push it to dinner at 8? Against my better judgment, I said yes. But Kevin seemed really nice when we were texting, and in his photos, he was cute. Really cute. He had this boyish smile with a twinkle in his eye, and his light brown hair was adorably messy as it fell over his forehead. He looked like a young Matt Damon. I've been on a lot of bad dates through Cinch, but I was cautiously optimistic about this one. I even arrived early at the restaurant, and I have spent the last 10 minutes eagerly waiting at the bar for him to arrive.
Sydney?
The man standing before me asks.
Yes?
I stare at the man, waiting for him to tell me that Kevin was killed in a tragic taxi accident on the way to our date, because this guy is definitely not Kevin. But instead, he sticks out his hand.
I'm Kevin, he says.
I don't budge from my bar stool.
You are?
Okay. Let's be real here. Nobody looks as good in real life as their dating app photos. I mean, if you're looking to score a date, you're not going to snap a photo of yourself when you're rolling out of bed with a hangover. You're going to doll yourself up, take about 50 different shots from every conceivable angle, and with a dozen lighting options, and you're going to pick the very best one. That's just good sense. And hey, maybe that one perfect photo was taken 10 years ago. I don't agree with this logic, but I understand why people do it. But this guy? There's no way he is the same man as in his Cinch profile. Not 10 years ago, not ever. I just don't believe it. Even though it's an obnoxious move, I grab my phone from my purse and bring up the app right in front of him. I compare the boyishly handsome man in the photo to the man standing in front of me. Yeah. Nope. My date for the evening is at least 10 years older than the guy in the photo, and bone thin,
bordering on gaunt. I think his eye color is different, too. His blonde hair is badly receding, but what's left of it is long and pulled back into an unkempt ponytail. This is not the same man as in the photo. I'm even more sure of that than I am of the fact that I enjoy long walks through Central Park and binging Netflix. Yes, that's me, fake Kevin assures me. Although, really, the guy in the photo is fake Kevin. Maybe the photo really is of Matt Damon. I'm starting to think it might be. I begin to protest that he doesn't look anything like the photo, but the words sound so superficial in my head. Okay, yes, Kevin looks vastly different from his profile photo. But does that really matter? We have been texting through Cinch, and he seems like a nice enough guy. I should give him a chance. And if it's not going well, my friend Gretchen will be calling me in 20 minutes with a manufactured excuse to get me the hell out of here. I never, ever go on a date without a planned rescue call.
It's really great to meet you in real life, the real Kevin says. You look exactly like your photo.
Does he expect me to say it back? Is this some kind of test? I say.
Come on, he says. Let's get a seat.
We snag a booth in the corner of the bar. As we're walking over there, I can't help but notice the way Kevin towers over me. I tend to like tall men, but he badly needs a little meat on his bones. It feels like I'm walking next to a broomstick.
I'm so glad we are finally doing this,
Kevin tells me as he slides into the seat across from me. Why is his ponytail so messy? Couldn't he have at least combed it before our date? Me too, I say, which is only slightly a lie. He rakes his gaze over me, an approving expression on his gaunt face.
I have to tell you, Sydney, now that we're actually meeting in person, I genuinely feel like you are the perfect woman.
Oh?
Absolutely.
He beams at me.
If I closed my eyes and imagined the perfect girl, it would be you.
Wow. That's sweet. Possibly one of the nicest compliments I have ever received on a date. Thank you, real Kevin. I'm starting to feel glad that I stayed. And, like I said, I do like tall men, so even though he looks vastly different from his profile, I get a tiny tug of attraction. Thank you.
Well, he adds, except for your arms.
My arms?
They're kind of flabby.
He wrinkles his nose.
But other than that, wow, like I said, you're the perfect woman.
Wait, my arms are too flabby? Did he really just say that to me? Worse, now I am straining to surreptitiously examine my bare arms. And why did I wear a sleeveless dress tonight? I have only two sleeveless dresses in my closet. I could have worn something with sleeves that would have concealed my apparently hideous arms. But no, I chose this. Can I get you two something to drink? A waitress is standing over us, her eyebrows raised. I pry my gaze away from my monstrous arms and look up at her. I'll have a Diet Coke.
A Diet Coke?
Kevin seems affronted.
That's boring. Get a real drink.
I never drink alcohol when I'm on a first date with a man I've met on Cinch. I don't want to impair my judgment in any way. Diet Coke is a real drink.
No, it's not.
Well, it's a liquid. I glare at him across the sticky wooden table. So I would call it a drink. Kevin rolls his eyes at the waitress.
Fine. I will have a Corona, and she will have a Diet Coke.
Then he winks at the waitress and mouths the word, sorry. I glance over at my purse next to me. When is Gretchen going to call? I need an escape route. But maybe I'm not being fair. I've only known real Kevin for 5 minutes. I should give him more of a chance. That's why I told Gretchen to call 20 minutes into the date, after all. 5 minutes is a snap judgment. If I can't give a guy more than 5 minutes, I'm going to be having first dates for the next 20 years. And now that I'm 34 years old, I don't have that luxury.
Hot damn,
Kevin remarks, following the path of the waitress with his eyes as she goes to get our drinks.
She has really nice arms.
Gretchen, where are you? Chapter 2.
So, you have to pay $2,000 if you're a new member joining the group, Kevin explains to me. But for every vacation package you sell, you earn a $5,000 commission. Pretty amazing, right?
I drag one of my French fries through a little trail of ketchup on my plate. We are nearly 40 minutes into this date, and I am inexplicably still here. Stupid Gretchen. She's making out with her boyfriend or something and has forgotten all about poor little me. I even texted her SOS and she still didn't call me.
I could definitely get you into the group.
Kevin chomps on one of his spicy barbecue chicken wings. He's got an incredibly healthy appetite for such a skinny guy. I pointed out to him once that the barbecue sauce was getting on his cheek, and he wiped it off at that time, but every single time he takes a bite, more of it gets all over his face. At some point, I got sick of telling him his face was dirty.
Do you want me to call Lois at the corporate headquarters? This is an amazing opportunity, Sydney. You're lucky I came along.
No, thank you, I say. Kevin reaches over and grabs my Diet Coke. When his wings arrived, he complained they were too spicy. And then, over the course of 15 minutes, he proceeded to drain his beer, then a second beer, and now he has commandeered my Diet Coke.
Why not? Why would you turn down an opportunity to make, like, six figures a year?
Because it's a pyramid scheme?
A pyramid scheme? Kevin chuckles. Why would you think that?
Because I am an accountant and I know what a pyramid scheme is?
No, you just don't understand, he insists. Look, I'm trying to do you a favor, Sydney. You've got this super boring job crunching numbers all day. Wouldn't you rather make a few sales a year and relax the rest of the time on your own luxury vacation property?
I don't know what to say to that, so instead, I grab my purse. I'm going to the bathroom. I hope the bathroom has a window I can climb out of. When I get to the ladies' room, I find that there is sadly no window. So I actually use the toilet, then I spend another 2 minutes looking at myself in the mirror, carefully examining my flabby arms. They don't look that bad, do they? Do they? I am Googling arm slimming exercises on my phone when it starts to ring. Gretchen's name pops up on the screen and my jaw tightens. Finally, she's calling. 45 freaking minutes into the meal. I swipe to take the call. Seriously, Gretchen? I bark into the phone without even saying hello. I have been on the worst date ever, and it's pretty much all your fault. That's not entirely fair. The real Kevin deserves at least 50% of the credit for this awful evening. But I'm pissed off, and I need to take it out on somebody. I'm so sorry, Gretchen cries. Randy and I were watching a movie, and we lost track of time.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even want to watch the movie, she insists. Randy promised me he wouldn't let me forget about the call, but then, well, you know. I can hear Randy in the background saying,
Hey, don't tell her it's my fault.
And then Gretchen giggles like he's tickling her or something. I bite my lip, resentful of how cute Gretchen and Randy are together. When she and I became friends, she was single, like me. Then, one day, we were riding up in the elevator together, and she started gushing about how adorable the super in my building is. And now they've been dating for like 6 months. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy my friend has found the guy of her dreams. I'm just still trying to find mine. Where are you now? She asks. Hiding in the bathroom, obviously. Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
It's fine, I grumble. You were probably making passionate love to your boyfriend while I'm stuck here with a guy who is trying to talk me into a pyramid scheme.
Oh, no, Sid. Seriously? That's not even the worst of it, I say. His mother tried to FaceTime him in the middle of our meal, and he actually took the call. I had to say hello to her. His mother, Gretchen, on our first date. I'm truly sorry, she says, even though I can tell she's trying not to laugh.
I'm sure.
Really, Sid, I'm the worst. Tomorrow after yoga, lattes and muffins are on me.
I suppose I can accept that apology. Anyway, the date is almost over. 5 minutes away from never seeing real Kevin or fake Kevin ever again. Well, I might see fake Kevin if I go to a Matt Damon movie. I tell Gretchen goodbye, take one last critical look at my arms, which are fine the way they are, Kevin. Then I head back out to the table. And lo and behold, a miracle has occurred and our check is on the table, waiting for me. I might get out of here sooner than expected.
You were in there forever, Kevin comments.
He wipes his lips with the back of his sleeve. It gets the sauce off his lips, but smears it all over his white and red checkered shirt. I don't even care anymore.
Did you fall in?
I manage a thin smile. Thanks for dinner.
Sure thing.
Kevin slides the check across the table to me.
Your share comes to $38.
I wouldn't have wanted Kevin to treat me to this meal because I don't want to owe him, but I'm having trouble figuring out how my small salad and Diet Coke plus tip somehow cost $38. The accountant in me wants to pick up the check and calculate my actual share of the meal, but the woman in me doesn't want to prolong this another second. So instead, I toss two 20s on the table. While Kevin is climbing out of the booth, the song Eye of the Tiger comes on the radio. He grins at me and winks.
This is my favorite song. Isn't Rocky the greatest movie of all time?
I haven't seen it. Kevin clutches his chest in astonishment, like I just told him I kill puppies for fun.
You haven't seen it?
Nope.
Well, now we know what we're doing on our second date.
I decide not to dispel him of the notion that there will be another date. But as soon as I get out of here, I am blocking him on Cinch. He doesn't have my real phone number, so he has no way of contacting me again.
And then, he adds, we can watch Rocky II on our third date and Rocky III on our fourth date.
He is in the midst of planning our seventh date, Rocky VI, when we get out of the bar. It's smack in the middle of August, which is a great time to wear a sleeveless dress that shows off my grotesque arms, but also peak humidity time in New York City. Despite my leave-in conditioner and my careful efforts with the curling iron, my hair has started to frizz. Thankfully, I couldn't care less what my date thinks of my hair right now.
I'll walk you home, Kevin tells me.
I nearly choke. No, that's okay. He sticks out his chin.
I absolutely insist. It's dark out. What sort of gentleman would I be if I let you walk home yourself in the dark?
It's okay, really.
You could be killed, Sydney.
That seems unlikely. Anyway, I'm willing to risk death just to get away from this guy. But he has a determined look on his face, and I'm starting to suspect that the easiest option would be to just let him walk me home. Not that I am actually going to let him walk me home. I live about 10 blocks away, and I figure after 3 or 4 blocks, I'll just point out a random building and tell him it's mine. Then I'll be free of real Kevin forever. Fine, I grumble. Let's go. He grins at me.
Lead the way.
Given that it's a Tuesday night rather than a weekend, the streets are emptier than they usually are when I'm out after dark by myself. Especially since I usually travel in a busier area, and now I am cutting through a more residential area just to get this over with as quickly as possible. The residential areas are always quieter, and they also smell less strongly of urine than the more populated path back to my apartment building. It's deserted enough here that it's not terrible to have Kevin's company. That said, there's no way I'm going to let him see where I live. I'll never get rid of the guy. I stop short at a brownstone a few blocks away from my actual apartment building. I gesture at the banister. Well, this is me. Hopefully, he won't insist on walking me into the building because I have no way to get inside.
but he seems very reluctant to leave.
I had a great time, Sydney, Kevin tells me. I can't quite bring myself to return the sentiment, even just to be nice.
Uh-huh.
A corner of his lip quirks up. How about a hug? I eye his outstretched arms and the pit stains that have gathered since we've been walking in the humid August air.
I don't hug on first dates.
Oh. At first, I think he's going to protest, but then he says, well, how about a kiss then?
Is he out of his ever-loving mind? I didn't even want to hug him, but I definitely don't want this guy's slimy lips touching mine.
Come on, he says. I bought you dinner. You're really not going to kiss me?
He bought me dinner? On what planet does my paying $40 for a salad mean that he bought me dinner?
I don't kiss or hug on first dates, I explain. And then, in case he asks to bump hips or God knows what, I add, I have a strict no-touching policy.
Seriously? He takes a step closer to me. He towers over me, but I can still smell the sour stench of beer on his breath. I take a step back, bumping into the short set of stairs up to the entrance of the building I claimed I live in. I scan the street, dismayed there isn't another pedestrian in eyeshot. I thought Kevin was a dud, but I had labeled him as harmless.
Big mistake. Come on, Sydney.
He takes another step closer to me, this time uncomfortably close. Kevin may be skinny, but he looks strong. Stronger than me, that's for sure.
You can't tease me like that. All I'm asking for is a kiss, for God's sake.
I think this date is over, I say firmly.
Don't be a tease, he frowns, his features contorting in the dim glow of the streetlight above us. All you women are the same. You're never going to land a husband if you won't even kiss a guy on a date, you know.
My mind races, thinking through the contents of my purse and what I could use as a weapon. Gretchen gave me a can of mace, but I took it out at some point because it kept leaking all over my purse and I had never been in a situation where I was close to needing it. I do have a spritz bottle of hand sanitizer. If I sprayed him in the eyes with hand sanitizer, would that do the trick? Of course, that would mean I would have to locate it in my gigantic purse, which is probably 80% crumpled tissues at this point. I decide the best bet is to push past him and make a run for it. In another block or two, I'm certain to run into another person.
Sydney, he says.
I avoid eye contact as I try to dart around him. But Kevin is quicker than he looks. His fingers close around my wrist, pinning it against the jagged brick wall of the building. His spindly fingers bite into my flesh.
Come on, Sydney, he says. Don't cut our night short. The fun is just getting started.
Chapter 3. Kevin has his body pressed against me. The stench of sour beer is almost overwhelming, and I have to turn my head away as I attempt to wriggle free. He doesn't just want to kiss. He wants something more than that. And he's not going to leave until he gets it. I should never have let him walk me home.
God, why is he so strong? Let me go! I hiss at him. I told you, he says through his teeth, to stop being a tease.
His body is pressed against me now, hot and uncomfortable. I open my mouth, ready to let out an ear-shattering scream. There are buildings on this block. Someone is sure to hear it, even though all the windows are closed and the air conditioners are blasting inside. But before any sound passes through my lips, a voice booms from behind me.
Hey! Hey! What are you doing over there?
Kevin eases his grip on my wrist. He backs away from me an inch or two, and I decide to take advantage of the fact that I can now move again. Bracing myself on a metal trash can next to me, I lift my right leg and knee him in the groin as hard as I can. It's gratifying how quickly Kevin goes down. I've never nailed a guy in the balls before, and wow, that works really well. He crouches down, clutching his family jewels, his face bright red. It's quite a rush. Well, until I lose my balance in the process and tumble to the ground, clocking my head on the metal garbage can.
You bitch! Kevin gasps. What the hell is wrong with you?
As I gingerly get back to my feet, I squint into the shadows at the figure who came to my rescue. It's too dark to see clearly, but it's obviously a man, about average build and height. He's looking down at Kevin, who is still doubled over, but then he glances up at me.
Are you okay, miss?
This is none of your business, Kevin spits out at him. We were on a date, you asshole. We were having a great time.
The mystery man continues to look at me, waiting for my answer, his eyes dark shadows. I'm fine. I brush sidewalk dirt off my sleeveless blue dress, which I will probably never wear again for a multitude of reasons, including self-consciousness about my unacceptably flabby arms. I should just throw it out after this. I mean, now I'm fine.
You're fine, Kevin bursts out. I should sue you for assault.
Mystery Man lets out an astonished snort.
I saw what you were trying to do. I'd be happy to call the police and let them know all about it.
With those words, he pulls his phone out of his pocket, as if about to call 911. He looks at me again, as if for permission, and I shake my head. That is not how I want this evening to end. I just want to go back home and soak in my bathtub, and block Kevin on Cinch. I can report him to the admins, since they have all his personal information. For the first time, Kevin looks properly worried. He manages to straighten up with some effort.
Hey, he says. Hey, look, maybe you got the wrong idea. I wasn't going to...
Get out of here.
The mystery man cuts him off.
Now, before your date changes her mind about calling the cops.
His voice lowers a few notches, almost to a growl.
And if you ever bother her again, I'm happy to testify to what I saw you do. Do you know what jail is like for a sex offender?
Kevin's eyes widen. He finally gets the idea. I watch my date limp down the street, in the opposite direction of my apartment building. It's only when he disappears from sight that I feel my shoulders relax.
Are you sure you're okay?
Mystery Man asks me. I swivel my head in the direction of his voice. He has stepped into the glow of the streetlight, so I can finally get a good look at him. And... wow. You know that cheesy thing people say? That they look at another person and get hit by a lightning bolt? I always thought that was absolutely ridiculous until it happened to me about 3 years ago and I met my first lightning bolt guy. But that didn't work out, and I had given up hope that it would ever happen again. But now... here it is. That damn lightning bolt once again. Mystery Man is hot, to say the least. He has thick black hair and coal black eyes, with a level of intensity that sends yet another lightning bolt through me. His strong jaw makes him seem utterly in control and confident. His face has that pleasing textbook symmetry. He's wearing a black t-shirt that shows off his lean build and makes his dark hair and eyes seem even more intense. There's also no glint of a wedding band on his left hand. But best of all is the way he's staring back at me. If I got hit by a lightning bolt, he did too. I'd bet my life on it. I'm okay, I manage. Just, you know, shaken. Mystery Man looks into the distance, making sure that Kevin is really gone.
Is he your boyfriend?
I shake my head. We just met tonight, hooked up on Cinch. My face burns slightly. I don't mean hooked up, obviously, but we had a date for tonight, I add, quite unnecessarily. It was bad.
I gathered.
He doesn't know where I live. I hug my arms to my chest. I'll report him to the app. They take this kind of thing seriously. I don't think he'll bother me again. But thanks for helping me. He flashes a lopsided smile.
Looks like you took him down pretty good yourself. He could barely walk.
I smile at the satisfying memory of how it felt to sink my knee into Kevin's balls. Thanks. Mystery Man is staring at me, that half-smile playing on his lips. The electricity between the two of us is palpable. Sometimes I'm not sure if a guy is interested in me or not, but from the way Mystery Man is looking at me, I know he's interested. And despite feeling shaken from what just happened, I would happily hand over my phone number right now. What a great meet-cute. I can already imagine telling the story to our children. This jerk was trying to kiss me, and that, kids, is how I met your father. Okay, I might be getting a little ahead of myself, but when you know, you know.
Can you make it home okay from here?
Mystery Man asks me. I look around. In the last few minutes, the streets have become more crowded. It doesn't feel quite as desolate as it did when Kevin grabbed me. I'll be fine. Great, he says. And then, to my shock, he starts to turn away. To leave. Thank you again, I call out. I really appreciate what you did. You're like my hero. That gets a full-on smile out of the guy. And, if possible, he's even more handsome when he smiles. He's got to be some kind of actor or model or something. I mean, jeez.
Of course, he says. I'm just glad you're okay.
We stare at each other for another beat, and I imagine the next words out of his mouth. Would it be okay if I called you sometime? Can I take you out on Saturday night? Can we make passionate love tonight? Are you down for that? But he doesn't say any of that. He doesn't even ask me my name. He simply raises one hand and says,
Well, good night then.
And then he walks away. What the hell?
Chapter 4. Before. Tom.
Daisy. I can't stop staring at her. I'm being too obvious. At some point, she's going to start thinking I'm a creep if I keep looking at her from 10 feet away and never make a move. But it's hard not to stare. She looks so good today. Her hair is the color of the center of a daisy, and it almost looks like gold glimmering in the sun as she stands surrounded by her friends just outside our high school. Her snug cornflower blue sweater follows all the soft curves of her body. Stop staring, Tom. Right now. Don't be a creep. She looks up, and for a second, I freeze. Caught. I wait for her blue eyes to narrow at me, but they don't. Instead, a slow smile spreads across her lips. A couple of her friends notice us looking at each other, and I hear a smattering of giggles. I can make out the words Tom and so cute, both in the same sentence. Jesus, Tom! Stop being a wuss and go talk to her already! My best friend, Slug, is leaning over me, spouting wisdom in my ear. His breath still smells like cigarettes, despite a healthy spritz of the mint mouth spray he uses to hide the smell from his parents. Unless they're dumb, they must know he smokes and have decided they don't care. Slug is the youngest of 5 kids, and his parents have pretty much checked out, as far as I can tell. As long as he doesn't take a flying leap off a building, they're happy. I'll talk to her, I say. Except I don't move. My feet feel stuck. Slug rolls his eyes so dramatically that all I can see between his eyelids is white. If I had a girl looking at me the way Daisy looks at you, I'd be sticking it to her behind the bleachers as we speak. Slug drools over every single girl in the entire school, and they all think he's gross. To be fair, he is gross. His real name isn't Slug, obviously. He got the nickname when we were in grade school because he used to eat bugs. Legit bugs. During recess, when we went to the playground and most kids were running around or playing kickball, Slug was chowing down on insects. Mostly ants. But one day, he found a slug squirming its way through the dirt, brought it to the cafeteria at lunchtime, and very theatrically swallowed it in front of our entire class. After that, most kids didn't want to hang out with Slug. So when I sat down across from him in the cafeteria at lunch one day, he looked amazed. 10 years later, we're still best friends. He stopped eating bugs, at least in front of other people, but he still doesn't have many friends. What do you say about a guy who is 17 years old with a nickname like Slug? Then again, what does it say about me that he's my best friend, my only friend? Also, it doesn't help his prospects with girls that even though he shot up to over 6 feet in the last 2 years, he's only gained about 10 pounds from when he was 5 feet tall. He looks a lot like a walking skeleton that put on a pair of blue jeans and a t-shirt and got a face full of acne. He sneers at me. What the hell are you so scared of? You know she likes you. I adjust the strap of my backpack on my shoulder. Fine. His face lights up. And when you talk to her, will you put in a good word for me with Allison? Sure, I say, to make him happy. Even though Slug has a better chance of scoring with a Victoria's Secret model than he does with Daisy's best friend. My heart is thrumming in my chest as I walk over to Daisy and her flock of friends. The girls are standing by the stairs leading to the entrance of the school, in front of a bunch of flyers stuck on the wall. Right behind Daisy's head is a flyer for this year's school musical, debuting in 2 weeks, Grease, and next to that is a black and white photo of a teenage girl with the word missing underneath. I recognize the face of Brandy Healy from our class, who ran away from home way back at the beginning of the school year, which is why the flyer is now crumpled and weather-worn. Tom! Daisy's face glows when I get within earshot. I thought you were tutoring today. I shake my head. I've always had a knack for math and science, so I've been tutoring them since my freshman year. Last semester, I tutored 3 days a week to make extra money. But this semester, it's only twice a week. I'm pleased Daisy knows my schedule. Used to. When she looks at me, her eyes are the color of the Pacific Ocean. I've never seen such a clear shade of blue. I literally can't imagine any girl being as perfectly beautiful as Daisy Driscoll. But somehow, my eyes are pulled away from her face and down to her slender neck, to the pulsation of her carotid artery, below the angle of her jaw. Most people's hearts beat at about 60 to 100 pulses every minute. I wonder how fast Daisy's heart beats. If I could watch for a minute, I could calculate her heart rate. So you're free then, huh? Daisy says. Uh-huh. I scratch at the back of my neck. Daisy's friends are all staring at me and nudging each other. The nice thing for her to do would be to step away from them so I could talk to her without being humiliated. But she's not budging. Do you, would you let me, walk you home? My request warrants a peal of giggles from the peanut gallery. One girl has her hand clamped over her mouth like this is the funniest damn thing she's seen all year. Shush! Daisy whips her head around to shoot her friends a look. Then she turns back to me with a serious expression on her face. I'd love to walk home with you, Tom. I'm so happy I don't even care if these stupid girls won't quit laughing. Let them laugh. I'm walking home with Daisy. But before Daisy can step away from her friends to join me, the girl standing closest to her, with pin-straight brown hair and thick glasses, grabs her arm. That's Allison, Daisy's best friend. I've got Slug and she's got Allison. Both of us could probably do better. Daisy, she murmurs. That's all she says. Daisy. Which makes me think she's said a lot of other things about me in the past. And now, that one word is a reminder of whatever awful thing she said about me when I wasn't standing right here. Allison doesn't like me. She's made that really clear. And it isn't that she doesn't know me and doesn't understand me. Allison knows me. We are, in fact, lab partners in biology this year. We have spent plenty of time together. And every minute we spend together, she likes me a little less.
Shush!
Daisy says, more firmly this time. Allison releases Daisy's arm, but not before shooting me a dirty look to end all dirty looks. If we were animals in the jungle, she'd be scratching my eyes out right now. I can't believe Slug's got a thing for her. But I don't care, because a second later, Daisy waves to her friends, and then she and I are walking away from the school in the direction of her house. And when she smiles at me, I forget all about Allison. Allison who? It's a really great day today. The sun is shining, and after the longest and coldest winter in history, we don't even need our jackets, finally. All I can think about is Daisy. She has a dreamy look on her face, and she's almost skipping along beside me. I've known Daisy a really long time, and there are times when she reminds me of that same girl in pigtails that I gazed at from across the playground when I was 4 years old, even though, back then, all I could hope for was friendship. But even when I was 4, I knew I wanted to marry Daisy Driscoll. And someday, I will.
Let me carry your backpack, I blurt out.
She looks at me in surprise. I can carry my own backpack. But isn't that what a guy is supposed to do? Carry stuff for the girl? I don't want to screw this up. Daisy is too important.
Yeah, but I want to carry it for you.
She considers my offer for a moment. Finally, she hands over her purple backpack.
You are such a gentleman, Tom.
I'm smiling to myself. I did good. At least, I'm smiling until I get her backpack onto my shoulder. The thing weighs a ton. What the hell does she have in here? Bricks? Jesus.
You have a lot of stuff in here, I gasp.
I like to carry all my textbooks with me.
She squints at me.
Is it too heavy for you?
No, of course not.
I can't exactly give it back. I didn't have to offer to carry it. But you don't have to be Einstein to realize that I'm not going to score points by telling her that her backpack is too heavy for me to carry. So, I suffer silently. I'm focusing most of my effort on not falling over backward from the weight of these two backpacks as we traverse the next several blocks in the direction of her house. Thankfully, it isn't far. We live in a tiny town, about 90 minutes from Buffalo, in upstate New York, where there's only one high school, everyone knows everyone, and you can walk clear across the whole town in an hour.
You're always so quiet, Tom,
Daisy says. Damn, these backpacks are distracting me.
Am I?
Not in class, she amends.
In class, you always have your hand up.
My face gets hot. Does she think I'm showing off in class? I'm not trying to. I just want to get good grades. Next year, we are applying to college, and I want to get into a top school so I can get into medical school eventually. My whole life, I've always wanted to become a surgeon. I think about it a lot. I've got an entire shelf full of medical textbooks, and I've read all of them. I wonder what it's like to cut into a person with a scalpel, to feel their skin separate under my hand, to see their insides. I can't wait to find out.
I don't mind, she says. You're smart. There's nothing wrong with being smart. In fact,
she smiles at me.
It's hot.
That's news to me.
It is?
Daisy stops walking and tilts her head to look up at me.
You know I like you, Tom, don't you?
I stop thinking about all the weight on my shoulders, and instead, my eyes are drawn to her neck again. She is so slim that I can see her carotid pulse perfectly. I even notice the way it speeds up as she waits to see how I'll respond to her confession. The carotid artery is the large artery that brings blood to the brain.
It's roughly an inch below the surface of the skin. Slicing through the carotid artery would result in death in about 10 seconds. The jugular vein is even more vulnerable. It lies just below the jawline and could easily be sliced with a sharp blade. I sense, however, that Daisy would not be interested in trivia about the delicate veins and arteries in her neck. So instead, I reach out and take her hand in mine. She looks very pleased by this turn of events. Much more so, I suspect, than if I sliced through her jugular with a knife. Daisy chatters as we walk, talking about her classes and her friends. I listen and nod my head and ask all the right questions at the right times, although mostly I'm focusing on how sweaty my hand has become. I'm trying to think dry thoughts, but it's hard. Daisy's hand is dry and soft and perfect. As much as I like being with her, it's a relief when we get to the steps of her front porch and I can hand over her 5-ton backpack and also yank my sweaty hand away from hers. I wipe it on my jeans as discreetly as possible, as if she didn't notice my palm had a puddle in it. Daisy has a nice house, 3 stories high and freshly painted a pale blue color that matches Daisy's eyes. It's one of the newer ones in the neighborhood, instead of being desperately in need of repairs, like mine. Daisy's family has more money than mine, and I'm also willing to bet she doesn't wake up in the middle of the night to the sounds of her parents screaming at each other and dishes shattering as they hit the wall.
"Well," she says, "thank you very much for walking me home, and thank you for carrying my bag."
"You're welcome.
You're so polite."
She giggles, as if pleased and amused by my politeness. I am always polite, because at home, there are consequences if I'm not.
"Are you always such a gentleman?"
There's a slight edge to her voice that makes me think she's looking for something from me. Does she want me to kiss her? We've been holding hands for the last 20 minutes. A kiss would be the natural progression, but it doesn't come easy to me. I've never had a girlfriend before, and I don't think Daisy has ever had a boyfriend before. Truth be told, I've only kissed a girl once, and I didn't even want to do it. She kissed me. Except the only people who know about that are me and her. And now, just me.
"Tom?"
Her head is tilted up to mine. She clearly wants me to kiss her. I reach out and run my finger along the base of her jaw. Her lips, puckered in my direction, are shiny with pink lip gloss. They are probably very soft and smooth and... Jesus Christ, why can't I just kiss her already?
"Hey, is that Tom Brewer over there?"
I leap about 5 feet away from Daisy at the sound of the booming voice coming from the side of the Driscoll house. I am mildly horrified by the thought that, if I hadn't been so chicken, Daisy's father would have caught me kissing his daughter. Thank God for small favors.
"Hi, Daddy."
Daisy flashes her father an easy smile.
"You're home early."
Jim Driscoll steps in front of us, all 6'3" of him. He is a solid wall of muscle, and if he had caught me kissing Daisy, he would probably be drop-kicking me as we speak. Daisy has 2 older brothers, both away in college, so she's the baby, and also the only girl. Her father is protective of her. But maybe he wouldn't have beaten me to a bloody pulp if he caught us kissing. He looks more amused than anything. Besides, I'm not a punk. It's not like he caught Slug almost kissing his daughter.
"I've got a late shift tonight," he explains to Daisy. "Just came home to change and kiss your mom goodbye."
Daisy crinkles her button nose.
"Yuck, Dad. TMI.
Her father lets out a booming laugh.
"Do you find that disgusting? I don't think Tom over here thinks kissing is disgusting."
He winks at me.
"Do you, Tom?"
If I could disappear into the ground right now, I would do it. He claps a large hand on my shoulder. I hit 5'10" this year, but Daisy's father still towers over me. So does my own father.
"You should come by for dinner some night. Daisy talks about you all the time. My wife and I would love to get to know you better.
Dad!
I don't know what is more gratifying. Finding out the girl I've been fantasizing about talks about me all the time, or seeing how mortified Daisy looks when he says it. She flashes me an apologetic look.
I really don't.
He ignores her. Well, Tom?
Yeah, sure, I mumble. That sounds great.
Daisy's father winks at me. You tell my wife when you're free, and she'll prepare a feast. You don't even have to wear a tie, although you'll earn extra points if you do.
Daisy's pale skin is turned an adorably pink shade. As her father disappears into the house, she shakes her head at me. You don't have to come to dinner, really.
I'm glad she said that, because I have no intention of ever having dinner with the Driscoll family. Even though I think about Daisy every moment of every day, I don't want to get to know Daisy's parents. I don't want to spend time with them, especially not her father. I'll be happy if Daisy's father and I never have a conversation again for the rest of my life. After all, the less time I spend with the chief of police, the better.
Chapter 5. Present Day. Sydney. As I walk the 3 blocks back to my building, the depression sets in. Yes, I just had one of the worst dates of my life. The guy almost assaulted me, and I am incredibly shaken from the whole thing. But it's the other guy I can't stop thinking about. Mystery Man. He saved me. There was no one else around to come to my rescue, but he was there. And when we looked at each other, there was a spark. I wasn't imagining it. We had a connection. And yet, he didn't want to pursue it. He didn't even ask me my name, or tell me his. Maybe this is my fault. He had just seen a man attacking me, and he most likely didn't want to be a creep hitting on me right after something like that. Maybe he was leaving it to me to make the first move. I should have asked him to escort me home. What's wrong with me? Well, there's no point in dwelling on it. There are millions of people in this city, and I'll probably never see Mystery Man again for the rest of my life. I blew it. By the time I reach my building, I am thoroughly miserable. I unlock the front door, glad, at least, that there is no doorman to make insipid conversation with. I pass through the mailroom, where my friend and neighbor, Bonnie, is sitting on the lone bench, staring down at her phone. Bonnie lives one floor below me, and she's 1 year older than I am and just a single. She is also a fan of using Cinch for dating, and over the last 2 years, she has dated 50% of all the single men in New York City. That's a conservative estimate. She says that online dating is a numbers game, and so in a given week, Bonnie goes on 7 dates. Sometimes more. After all, you can have lunch dates in addition to dinner, and who says you can't have drinks with one guy and then dinner with another? But in spite of the numbers, and the fact that Bonnie is very pretty, with silky blonde hair, China doll features, and a cute curvy figure, she is still single. Hey, Bonnie, I say. Bonnie is smiling down at whatever is on her phone. She's got bright red lipstick on and smoky eyes, and from the looks of her, she's been on a date tonight like me. Hopefully it went better than mine.
Hey, Sid. She doesn't look up from her phone. How was your date tonight?
On a scale of 1 to 10? -1,000,000. Bonnie finally lifts her eyes, and her face drops. She clasps a hand over her mouth.
Oh my God!
The look of horror on Bonnie's face makes me uneasy. Why is she looking at me like that? What?
You... Her fingers fly to her forehead. You're bleeding! A lot!
Oh no. I rifle through my purse of mysteries until I come up with my compact. When I finally manage to get a look at myself, I let out a gasp. Apparently, when I bumped my head on that garbage can, it did a little more damage than I thought. I have a small cut that has oozed blood all over my forehead. I look like the victim out of a slasher movie. Oh, God, I mutter.
No wonder Mystery Man didn't ask for my phone number. He was probably completely disgusted by my bloody wound. Men do not find that sort of thing attractive. And I should know, I'm a bleeder. I have something called von Willebrand disease, which basically means that if I get a paper cut, I'm going to leave a trail of blood behind me. It was first discovered when I was a little kid, when I kept getting gushing nosebleeds practically every week. As a child, my friends thought it was amusing that I was spurting blood left and right. As a teenager, it was gross and embarrassing. Thankfully, the nosebleeds are under control. I have accepted that if I get a cut, it's going to bleed more than the average person. I take birth control pills to suppress my menstrual cycles. It's not that big a deal. Well, except when I meet a guy I like and he gets turned off by my bloody wound. This is just great, I grumble as I pull out one of the dozens of tissues from my bag and dab at the cut. I'll definitely need some water to get it cleaned up properly. I've got emergency band-aids somewhere in the depths of my bag as well. Are you okay? Bonnie asks. Yeah, it's not as bad as it looks. How did it happen? I fell and clocked my head on a garbage can. Ew, do you need a tetanus shot for that? I plop down on the bench next to Bonnie. Probably not, but don't worry, I'm up to date on my vaccines. Good, she winks at me. I don't want you getting lockjaw or anything. Of all the people in the building, Bonnie would be the most able to sympathize with my awful night. But the truth is, I don't feel like talking about it. I want to forget the last 2 hours ever happened. So what are you smiling about? I ask her. Hot date tonight? Bonnie pats her blonde hair, which is pulled back into a purple scrunchie that matches her top. Bonnie is the only grown woman in the 21st century who wears scrunchies, but she somehow pulls it off. It's kind of her signature. Yes, actually. He just walked me home. Despite everything, I'm happy for her. Besides, if a girl like Bonnie, who is smart and gorgeous and funny, can't find a significant other, there is absolutely no hope for the rest of us. I don't want to jinx it, she says, but I've been dating this guy on and off for a year now, mostly off. He is really hot, but a total commitment phobe. I'm basically a booty call for him. I wouldn't even bother with him, but like I said, he's hot, and also he's great in bed. She glances down at her phone again. But tonight he was talking about being exclusive. He was ranting about how he's sick of dating and wants to settle down. I don't know. I don't want to rain on her parade, but guys like that are trouble. You really think a guy like that could be serious about commitment? The thing is, she says, he's a serious guy. He doesn't seem like a player. Honestly, even though we mostly just hook up, I don't think he's hooking up with anyone else. He's super nice, and he's smart, and he's funny. He's actually a doctor. A hot, single doctor who just hits her up for booty calls? She's got to be out of her mind if she thinks this guy is settling down anytime soon. Well, I say, good luck. Are you coming to yoga tomorrow? Bonnie, Gretchen, and I have been taking yoga together 3 afternoons a week for the last year. It's how we got to know each other. Sure, she says. Great, I say. And you can let me know any updates on Dr. McHottie. But Bonnie isn't even listening to me. She's back to smiling down at her phone again. Yep, she's totally gone. I hope Dr. McHottie doesn't turn out to be Dr. McJerkface. I take the elevator up to the 10th floor, where I've been renting out a one-bedroom apartment since my last live-in relationship fell apart very abruptly. I was dating this great guy, and I honestly thought he might be the one. I mean, we were living together, so it was obviously pretty serious. But then, well, I don't like to think about it. Or him. When I get up to my floor, I walk down the dimly lit hallway, on the way to the last apartment on the left. Even though I live in a decent neighborhood, and I've got 2 locks on my door, there's part of me that is always a little apprehensive when I walk into my apartment. Every once in a while, you hear about some single girl in the city getting strangled or stabbed to death in her own place. But
That's unlikely. There are no signs of a break-in. I'm sure there's nobody lying in wait. Besides, what are the chances of being attacked twice in one night? I fit my key into the lock, jiggling it a little like I always have to. After a few seconds of struggle, the lock turns and the door swings open. Chapter 6. My apartment is silent. Too silent. A completely quiet moment is rare in a Manhattan apartment, no matter how late it is. Even when I'm stumbling to the bathroom at 3 in the morning, I can usually hear someone partying right outside my window. That's why the quiet when I open the door unsettles me. "Hello?" I call out in a hoarse voice. In response, a siren rips through the silence, tearing down the street right outside my window. I stand there for a moment, waiting for the bleeding sound to disappear into the distance before I let out a little sigh of relief. Everything is normal here. There are no intruders, no signs of breaking and entering. The city is its usual level of noisy. Nothing to worry about. I enter my small apartment. And by small, I mean tiny. An apartment in Manhattan is considered big if you can fit a table in the kitchen. You can't fit a table in my kitchen. You can barely fit a person in there. My biggest motivation to keep my weight down is knowing I won't be able to fit in my kitchen or bathroom if I put on too many extra pounds. But on the plus side, it's not one of those micro apartments where you can't even stand up straight and your oven doubles as a refrigerator. I drop my purse in its usual spot on the bookcase next to the front door, which is stuffed with trashy romance novels that have lead characters who look very much like Mystery Man. Romance novels give you an extremely unrealistic concept of romance. If I were a character in one of those books, our meet-cute would have been quickly followed by Mystery Man ripping off his t-shirt to reveal gleaming, rock-hard abs, and then thrusting his throbbing loins against me. My apartment is quiet, with no signs of anyone lying in wait to murder me. The living room is sparsely furnished with the sofa from IKEA, a widescreen television, and a desk with my laptop on it that I have been using with increased frequency since I started mostly working from home during the lockdown. My first stop is the bathroom, so I can check out the damage to my forehead. The cut itself is small, but thanks to my faulty clotting factors, it's bleeding quite a lot. I look quite frightening. No wonder Mystery Man hightailed it. Since this is a frequent occurrence, I have a well-stocked first aid kit. I grab some gauze and keep pressure on my forehead. After I sop up most of the fresh blood and clean up what has already dried, I tape a pressure dressing in place. Hopefully, by tomorrow it will have stopped bleeding enough that I can make do with a Band-Aid. Stupid Kevin. I'm going to write a lengthy complaint to Cinch. I should have called the police after all. After the dressing is secured, my eyes drop down to the rest of my face. I look pale and tired. I recently turned 34, although most people think I'm in my mid-20s. But right now, I could pass for 40. I'm not beautiful the way Bonnie is, but a lot of men find me attractive. My brown hair has natural blonde streaks, my eyes are an intriguing gray color, and a little mascara is enough to make my usually invisible light brown eyelashes stand out. When I smile, I have a hint of dimples, and my teeth are the pleasing result of 3 years of braces from ages 11 through 13. And yet, I can't manage to find a decent guy. I get the feeling that Bonnie is picky, but I'm not. I'm not looking for the most gorgeous guy on the planet. I'm not trying to marry a millionaire. All I want is a decent man who doesn't have a drinking or a gambling problem, who is fun to talk to, who has a nice smile, and who likes me as much as I like him. Is that really such an impossible dream? I suppose it must be, or else I wouldn't be alone right now. While I am busy feeling sorry for myself, my phone rings in the other room. I retrace my steps back to where I left my purse on the table next to the front door and dig my phone out from inside. For a split second, I get excited that maybe Mystery Man tracked down my phone number and is calling to ask me out on a date. But no, it's the worst possible alternative to that. It's my mother. I can't think of anything I am less excited to do right now than talk to my mother. But it would be cruel not to pick up the phone. She worries a lot about me going out on dates, even though I assure her that I always meet men in public places and that they don't know where I live. Of course, given what happened tonight, her concern isn't unjustified. She's worried even more the last few years since my father died suddenly from a heart attack. He used to keep her calm, but now that she's retired from her teaching job and is living all alone, I'm pretty sure all she does is sit in her house and worry about me. If I lived anywhere besides Manhattan, she would surely sell her house in Connecticut and move in right next door to me. But she finds the city intimidating, so I'm safe from having my mother as my next door neighbor. For now. Although, if I told her about Kevin, she would probably put her house on the market tomorrow. "Sydney!" she cries before I can even say hello. "Did you have a date tonight?" "Yes." I take my phone into the kitchen to grab that glass of wine I was craving at dinner. But it's over. "Oh." I can't tell if she sounds relieved or disappointed. Probably a little of both. "How was it?" "Eh." "Is that good or bad?" I tip about half a cup of red wine into a plastic glass. No point in being fancy if I am all alone. Hey, at least I'm not drinking straight out of the bottle. "I don't think there will be a second date." The understatement of the century. "I just don't understand it," my mother says. "You are such a beautiful girl. The boys should be lining up for second dates with you." I wonder how old I will have to be before my mother stops calling the men I date boys. I imagine if I'm single when I'm 50, which is starting to feel increasingly likely, she will still be referring to them as boys. By then, she'll probably be living with me. We'll probably be sharing the same bed. "It's a mystery," I mutter as I take a long drink of wine. "Oh, but I have some good news." "Please, not a setup. Please, not a setup." What? "My friend Susan's daughter just had a baby." I take another swig of wine. "Wow, fantastic." "No, you don't understand," my mother says. "She's 38. She is 38, and she was still able to have children. And you're only 34, so you've got at least 4 years of fertility. More if you freeze your eggs." "Wonderful." I drain the rest of my wine glass. "Listen, I'm kind of tired, so I'm going to go now." "Don't be mad at me, Sydney. I'm just trying to show you that you have options." "I'm not mad. I'm just tired." It takes another minute of reassuring my mother to get her off the phone. Even though talking to her gives me a slight headache, when I hang up, the apartment seems deafeningly silent again. Why is dating so hard? Why can't I just find a great guy, marry him, and live happily ever after? Is that really too much to ask for? Chapter 7. Yoga is over at 4:30. Arlene's Hatha yoga class in the late afternoon can get pretty crowded, but I got here early enough to snag a spot next to my friends. I mean, I get that yoga is about pranayama and shakarma, but it's also about shooting your friends agonizing looks when the teacher suggests a ridiculously difficult pose and keeps telling you to breathe when all you want to do is freaking collapse. Arlene ends her guided meditation, which is how we spend the last 15 minutes of every class. I glance over at